Hey everybody, this week's question is a question related to volume of running and mileage. So here's the question. I know based on all of your podcasts and sample schedules, this far that you do not prescribe weekly mileage, but instead think about what is the goal per day. Mostly this is related to me. Steve still uses weekly mileage as a structure and construct, which personally I have no problem with. It's not for me in my program. Again, different variances on how chefs, choose to create their masterpiece. The question does continue. So here, the question is then several parts. One, how do you determine what is the appropriate amount of running per day? Two, is there a goal amount of running that differs based on event? Three, a lot of the running I saw on the schedules is by feel. Do you ever use paces for medium long run days as maybe they're more moderate and stimulus? And then finally, how do you quantify workload or track load or track workload when using minutes for easy days? These are all great questions. I know my construct's a little different and how I view the world is not traditional, but I'll answer them in order here. So the first question is, how do I determine what is the appropriate amount of running per day? This goes back to a podcast Steve and I might have had. I'll try to see if I can dig it up and remember it, where I gave kind of a breakdown of the different time durations and the not only the physiological response that we're trying to create in the organism, which is the athlete, but also just the psychological ease of the activity. So for me, I look at things in 30-minute thresholds, 0 to 30, 30 to 60, 60 to 90, 90 to 2 hours. So those four thresholds we know have different hormonal and other physiological responses. So 0 to 30 is kind of like a shakeout run in my world. And there's not a whole lot going on. It's a very easy, mundane activity. You know, there's not a host of physiological benefits necessarily from a growth and adaptation standpoint happening if it's at a very relaxed pace. And for me, relaxed pace is a conversational pace. You don't even feel like you are breathing that heavy. You can have a normal conversation. And then 30 to 60 minutes, that's what I call a regeneration or restorative pace, a distance and duration. So that 30 to 60 minute window, we know that there is a positive hormone release. There's gaseous exchanges that happen consistently and long enough in the body that creates this oxidative recovery profiling, which means, you know, part of the recovery process is flushing out toxins out of the body, metabolic toxins that built up after your difficult days of work. So if you have a track workout day, one thing you can do is prescribe a double regeneration day, using my language and my world of coaching. And what that would be is 30 to 60 minutes in the morning and in the afternoon, with the key intent that you're creating oxidative recovery to help the gaseous exchange, let the air breathe out of the lungs, you know, and breathe out carbon dioxide and breathe out just these metabolic waste products that have been sitting there dormant in the different tissues. And then two, through sweat. And then two, just the rigors and metabolic flush that happens within the internal organs from that type of activity for that duration. So the science is very clear. That is about 30 to 50 minutes with the more veteran and elite athletes who sometimes are a little bit more, as you call mileage hogs, or just like running and enjoy it as a activity of joy and enthusiasm. I will, you know, kind of put a speed limit, or I should say distance limit, at 60 minutes. Now, 60 to 90 minutes, different things happen there. That falls more into medium long run territory in my world. So there, yeah, you're getting all these positive hormonal releases, you're getting the gaseous exchange, but it's a little bit more difficult in terms of the time on the feet and duration of activity. The body just starts to go into more of a sympathetic mind frame after 60 minutes versus 0 to 60 is about parasympathetic if you're keeping the pace and the exertion relatively low. So for people who like to work in heart rate world or pace world, I would say low is being, you know, 60-65% of max heart rate, which is going to be somewhere around or slower than 3-4 hour running pace. And you know, for the athletes I work with, that's assumed that's longer than marathon pace. So go slower than if you're running a marathon, not racing, just running, right? So I hope that's kind of helpful to think about it in that way. That's where, again, now you're inching into training, like proper, versus regenerative or restorative days. That is the point of the day, is to reboot, reset, get ready, absorb the difficult session, get the response out of it that you wanted, and then prepare and be ready to do another difficult session so you can then play that stimulus adaptation response cycle game. From 90 to 2 hour plus, that is a tough session, no matter what pace you're going. Just time on the feet, the body moving through space and being subject to gravity, that's tough. So I view that as its own type of day. It's not a restorative or regenerative run. It's a real run. And even if you're running at a relaxed pace for a long run, that is still honest work, because again, now you have all the different tissues, soft tissue, tendons, ligaments, muscles, etc., having to encumber a load for 90 minutes and greater, as well as just continue to keep the engine going. And then if you start to add different intensities or, you know, different disciplines of intensities on top of that, layer it, it becomes even incredibly more difficult. So, you know, with that in mind, that's how I determine the appropriate running around per day, because I look back, I say, what type of day do we want? Do we want a restorative or regenerative day? Do we want a really easy shakeout day? Do we have a workout day? Do we have a longer running day that's designed to be the pseudo workout metabolically and physiologically, and even to a certain degree neuromuscularly? And then two, that colors my decision profile moving forward. So if I want, again, here's a quick little program of training as an example. Let's say we know we have a big session, mile repeats for the 5K runner on a Tuesday, you know, 4 or 5 by a mile at 5K, cutting down to like 3K pace. So difficult session, right? And then we are going to say, okay, and we are, because of scheduling purposes, they have a long run on Sunday. So that Monday in my world, super easy. That might be a shakeout jog, 30 minutes max as you feel, 15, 20 minutes, just getting things warmed up and feeling good. Great. Goodbye. Send you home, because the next day's work is really important. But now the day after that mile repeat session will be typically for the younger runner, a regenerative restorative day. For the senior runner, the more veteran runner, I might try to, you know, get greedy and squeeze out, you know, if we're early in the training cycle, early in the preparation cycle, and their target race is, you know, about 10 plus weeks away, a little bit more stimulus, a little bit more response with a little different exposure, by saying, okay, yeah, medium long run there. So that way you're getting back-to-back days and you're creating this heightened elevation of stress and stimulus, but two, you did the most stressful work first on Tuesday, and then you came back and you did work that is not as stressful globally on its own, but coupled in marriage with the workout the day before, makes it for a stressful profile. And then from there, that's mandatory, like 2 days, real easy. So let's say we have the senior athlete who's a little bit more veteran, trying to compete at the national class level. Then their Thursday, right, would be optional double recovery run, optional double regeneration run. So two runs, maybe just one run, 30 to 60 minutes as they feel. And then the Friday, depending on the training age and competency and where they are, might be another shakeout jog or just a restorative run. You know, so no more than 60 minutes of running, maybe throwing some strides in, maybe not, depending on how they're bouncing back, right? And because if we're going to hold them to, say, a Saturday session again, and we want to be ready to go on Saturday after 3 days buffer between that difficult workout, a kind of mini extended workout with the medium long run on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, then I want to be sure their battery, their fuel, their engine, everything, their whole body is fully recharged as close as possible to full, like 90% and up on Saturday. And sometimes I tell athletes, like, hey, that's the place we want you to start this Saturday session at. If you're not at above 90, then let me know and we'll move it back a day. You know, because rest is the thing that gets us better. Rest and regeneration. You know, in Steve's books, Peak Performance, that is the formula. That is the secret sauce. It's so easy to say, oh, work, 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 work. More is more better. It is and it isn't. More work is better if it's coupled with more rest. That's the caveat, right? So I hope that helps. Again, if it doesn't, email me personally, and I'll be happy to either have a conversation with you on the phone or throw emails or Twitter messages back and forth to help kind of shape and prompt your thought, so you can better understand how I view appropriate amount of running per day. And then from there, the second question is, is there a goal amount of running that differs based on event? It's mostly based on athlete in the event, right? So we might have a low mileage 1500 meter runner, and structurally they can't handle more than this, or the volume of running that we might deem traditional for that event group might cause them to be in a state of sympathetic override all the time. Because again, we want a nice pulse in training, right? You want to shift that parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, and I'm using those as the stress on, engaged, fight, let's get after it, that's sympathetic, versus the calm, soothing, relaxed, regenerative, restorative, parasympathetic. And so we want to create, just like we do with training, hard, easy from a physical body of work standpoint to a mental, emotional, cognitive standpoint. And that's how more I make the decision profile of, okay, what's the goal amount of running based on their needs, their limiting factors, and what they can physically handle. For me, in my world, I kind of go operate with a very historical mindset. If you look at runners in the early 1900s, late 1800s, workouts were number one. They knew doing the hard work would have an effect that would get you better. And we know that doing the hard work does affect improvement if it's coupled with judicious and appropriate recovery and buffers, right? So I think of different heuristics and rules of thumbs here. Hard sessions aerobically, like tempo runs if you want, or lactate threshold running, or hard mile repeats, can take about minimum 48 hours, maximum 72 hours in my world, of buffer and distance from one session to the next. Same thing with central nervous system work. That's about a minimum 72-hour profile, maximum 96, right? So 3 to 4 days. So if you know these kind of guidelines, then that helps shape your training calendar appropriately, because, again, we don't want too much cross friction and then creating fatigued, whether it's physical, cognitive, sympathetic override that then suppresses the athlete, gets them sick, gets them tired, gets them overtrained, gets them lethargic, and that's the difficult thing. There's all this work we could do. And you're just like, how do I squeeze all this work into a 7-day cycle or even a 14-day cycle? The answer is you don't. Unfortunately, you leave a lot on the table, because rest is where we get the effect and the response from the work. And so typically, again, I just think in how much work we need, how much buffer we need between the work. And then it kind of populates itself, the weekly mileage, right? Some athletes might like, I need a day off every week, without a doubt. Or they might say, I might need one day off every month. Or we just take a day off as necessary. Days off aren't bad. They're good if they're, prescribed and taken for the correct reasoning. So I hope that answers question two about if there's a goal amount of running that differs based on events. I know it's not specific and I can't get into the nitty-gritties, because again, every athlete in my worldview is an N of one. But if you know the basic heuristics and you work in that construct, 0 to 30, 30 to 60, 60 to 90, 90 plus minutes, then you start to say, okay, this can color and better shape how I prescribe training, with the idea that the workouts are the thing that have the most effect, should it be then wedded to and followed by intelligent restorative days to get the effect. That third question is, a lot of the schedules I put out so far are, the running is based on feel. And if I ever prescribe exact paces for medium long run days, as maybe they are more moderate and stimulus. Correct that they're more moderate and stimulus, 100%. So sometimes if it's a standalone, yeah, I'll encourage people to progress and go by feel. Again, at the end of the day, the athlete can feel when they're fit. They can feel when they're at home. They need to be able to centrally, viscerally, emotionally respond to and know the state of running that they're in. And the good ones, right, they're like clocks. They can run 440 mile pace for men for like 10K, and it's just, that's their sweet spot. Women, 6 minute mile pace for a half marathon, it's their sweet spot. And we want to get people closer and more familiar in condition, whether your pace is 7 minute pace for a half, 8 minute pace for a half, that should be home. And in the beginning, yeah, you use the watch as a intensity disciplining and as a calibration tool, but then more and more and more, get away from the watch and just trust and rely that your speed of play will be generally ballpark around that. You know, I always say about 8 seconds, give or plus or minus per mile. That's the certain pace familiarity one should have. So if I say, hey guys, 10 mile tempo run today at 6 minute pace. If you're 5:52 to 6:08, it's the same. It's the same for the body. It does not interpret it any different. We might freak out because the watch has a high degree of variance, but it's the same. And so if we respect that truth and nature's law, then you have an opportunity to kind of free the burden or free the rigidity that one might have by saying you have to run this exact time because it correlates to this exact intensity. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to say a certain time for a certain athlete, you know, correlates to a certain intensity or intensity of effort or exertion of effort. And we can measure that in pace. We can measure it in heart rate. We can measure it in lactate. We can measure it in a lot of different ways, but we're all kind of dancing around the same thing and trying to get to the same end game, which is run a certain intensity of effort that's going to help get you better and have a bettering effect after you've done that effort. And so for the medium long run days that stand on their own, that might be a thing. Sometimes I just give them the freedom too. And the reason is we are very structured on the track with the group athletes I work with. So there are like exact pace windows. There are exact, we're running 400 meters, not 500 meters today. And we're running them at 63 to 64, not running them at 66 to 60, you know, nine, right? And so because we have that structure on the track, and it's so structured, I try to, when we're off track, alleviate that burden and that stress of thinking, oh, I have to be held accountable to this exact structure. And sometimes too, it's a training tool to see what it is. Like if an athlete's getting fitter, they will naturally run faster for a medium long run or for their general running, but it will feel the same speed of restoration. It'll feel like, oh, that was easy. That was not a big deal. And when you start to see a pattern develop over a couple weeks where now they're, you know, restorative or regenerative running for any type of run under 60 minutes is at 7 minute pace. And it used to be naturally at 7:35 pace. Like that's a clear signal of like, oh, I'm getting fit because the recovery is happening quicker. They can run a quicker speed of play. Yet the physiological and perceptive interpretation is the same. And that is, to me, a key marker. And so if I try to force the issue and say, you need to run 7 minute pace on this run, you need to do this, I'm kind of trying to override the system. And 9 times out of 10, it's folly, because nature and the natural and the body's natural feedback loops will come into play, and they will dominate and own the dialogue and also the outcome. So it's more harmonizing in my world and being patient, not rushing, not saying we have to get ready for this race by this time or else. Yes, we want urgency. Yes, we want to, the result matters. The process to the result, that is the key thing. And sometimes the process to the result is not the result we want. Sometimes I might say, oh, we have this target race and I want, you know, get in, be competitive, and to get here, I have to run this qualifying time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it might be this target race in 3 months. But yet they get there and they fail and they have an outcome that's a show crush. But who's to say that's not a springboard for something to come later? You know, pointing to Steve Magnus and Natasha Rogers last year. Natasha had a horrible indoor season by her standard. Didn't even break 9:20, didn't run the U.S. Championships indoor. You know, she was just, you know, disappointed and traumatized and just shocked. Like, what am I doing with my life? She had a real existential crisis of sorts based off very lackluster results, even though the work she was putting in was at national class and global class repute. Fast forward, you know, from end of February to end of April, she wins the U.S. Half Marathon Championships. And, you know, doing it in a very dramatic fashion. And then went on to run nearly 15 flat for 5K and almost make, you know, was the world championship team in the 10K. She was fifth in that the U.S. trials there. So sometimes, again, we get myopic and we short-sighted and we say, hey, it's not having an immediate effect. And, you know, that's just sometimes not how the athlete grows, even though we want to structure it and we want to have an eye on, like, confidence that we can perform on the day. My caution and my encouragement is patience, patience, patience. All the work you do is like money in the bank. It does not evaporate, right? So think of it like that. But on occasion, yes, I do prescribe certain gradients of effort. Like, I'd like this medium long run pace to progress and be at this effort. And again, the athletes I'm working with are elite, and they've been doing it for 10 plus years, and they have a really attuned sense as to what pace and what rhythm of speed and effort correlates with. But for the younger athlete, for the novice athlete, for the athlete who's not so confident or not so consistent, the watch is a good tool to calibrate. It's a calibration device, but you shouldn't become dependent on it, right? It should record, not direct the session. And when it starts to record the session to calibrate you, then you can start to more and more and more take the watch off the wrist. But in the meantime, as coach, yes, intensity discipline should be exercised, because you should know exactly what the response is, you know, on a variety of levels, physically, mentally, emotionally, right? So physiologically, neuromuscularly, cognitively, psychologically, etc. And then say, okay, can I create the environment with the training prescription for that day to elicit the conditions to get that response for that athlete, and how that syncs up into their broader scale of programming and training and development. And then lastly, that final question is, how do you quantify workload or track workload when using minutes for easy days? So again, this comes back to intensity of effort. I look on the track, let's say we're doing for milers, I look at how long a session with the rest is going to be in minutes. So if we're doing a session of, let's say, 12 times 400 at 60 seconds, I'll just use nice round numbers here, for a 4-minute miler male, and we're saying we're going to take 30 seconds rest in between each one of those reps, and we're just going to go continuous, right? So now I have 12 minutes of work at their mile speed, their gate pace mile speed. That's 3 times their race time that they're running. So I have 12 minutes, and then the rest is an equal factor. Rest counts too. If it's 30 seconds, that's another 6 minutes. So now I have 18 minutes of work in my world. So I look at 18 minutes of work on the track. That is, then you multiply it out, that's 4 times the workload time. Because again, the rest is incomplete, right? And the body does not know, oh, I'm completely recovered, and it stops the clock. No, the physiological processes are still going in full swing, even in the recovery intervals. So then 18 minutes, boom, that's a lot of work, especially if they're a younger 4-minute miler. Now, if they're an older 4-minute miler, sure, I might have them on the track with our, like, what I call activation warm-up and everything, and strides. I start the clock when they start doing that on the track after after drills are done and after the warm-up jog is done. When they start doing more technical work or more intense-based work, I start running a clock. And so for me, for a miler, for an elite level, I want them no longer on the track than a maximum 60 minutes, maybe sometimes 75 minutes, right? And when I stay accountable to that ceiling, then they have good sessions. They will bounce back from them. They will absorb them. But when I get sloppy or lazy and we're on the track with the rest intervals, with, you know, strides and our activation warm-up, and it ends up being 90 minutes, 2 hours, it's just too much time. The work turns to junk. So start the clock when you plan out your track sessions. Start the clock when you start strides. Start the clock when you start the quality work. Any quality work, drills not necessarily, but when the quality running work begins, start the clock. And the clock just runs with no stops, no breaks. You know, rest counts too. So for the younger, like, say, high school age athlete, I think 30 minutes is a fine threshold. And, you know, maybe you can sneak up to 40. For the more senior college level athlete, you know, again, 40 to 50, maybe if they're a national class All-American and they have that level of competency, you can experiment with up to 60. The national class pros I work with, 60 is enough. Sometimes 70, So, but you typically, but for the miler, let's say it's between 50 to 70. Now, again, different rules for different event groups. If you're on the track for a 10K, that's 30 minutes. Yeah, then we can be on the track doing work for 90 minutes, right? Up to. But again, people, you have to be really disciplined and really uncompromising to quality. When the quality starts to suffer, cut, cut, cut. And as you coach more by time and using that as a secondary resource to help influence your decision profile, then all of a sudden you become crisper, a little sharper. And it's not by all means the end all be all. It's just another matrix that I put a lot of value in, that I personally have decided is a clear signal from the blizzard of noise that exists out there. And it works well because the body does know time. The body has a natural clock. The heart pumps at a natural rhythm in different intensities, in different states of being. So the lungs breathe at a natural rhythm. They run on time. They don't run on distance, right? So I think it's just more harmonizing to think more in time of what we're doing. And if it correlates to a certain number of miles or kilometers ran in a week or in a two-week cycle or in a day, that's fine too. That's another measure. That's another set of evidence and data that can influence your decision tree moving forward as a coach based on how to develop and optimize as best you can the athlete in front of you. So I hope this little question and answer podcast was valuable. This is the preferred route that we're going to go with it because it allows me to give you guys a little bit more nuance and chat in your ear, and hopefully you can listen to it over and over and over again. We'll see what the feedback is. Let me know. Again, you guys are our first class of members, so we're thankful you're here. I mean, it's such a privilege. And also, too, thanks for weathering the rocky waters with us. This is Steve and I's first time doing anything like this. We're building it from scratch with no map. There is no template, and there will be errors. There will be delays. It's two guys who, you know, are all still working full time as coaches, but so passionate and excited that you're here and excited to share what we know and help you get better and we get better. And I mean, it's a virtuous cycle. So know that's why things might be slow at occasion. It's two human beings doing all the work, not robots. One day maybe we might hire someone and, you know, to help streamline, but, you know, I cannot thank you enough for being here. It is such a privilege and a blessing. I get up every day excited to not only coach the athletes I'm working with, but also be able to contribute to your development and learning as either, you know, a coach or an athlete or both. So thank you.